Merħba għal-programm Minajnejn Barranin fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. In today's edition of Minajnejn Barranin, Malta Through Foreign Eyes on Campus FM 103.7, the program is also available on the website, as you know. I have a guest from Malta and Canada. Her name is Genevieve Abella. She's what you might call a returned migrant. Her parents had emigrated to Canada in the past. She was born in Malta, but they went there when she was 4. She returned when she was 18. Genevieve Abella, welcome to the program.
Hi, Colin. Thanks for having me here.
So you've lived for a substantial amount of time, most of your childhood and some of your teen years in Canada. Have you lived in any other country apart from Canada and Malta since you were 18?
I haven't. We moved to Canada, like you just said, when I was 4. So my formative years were in Canada, and I moved back when I was 18, so I've been here since then.
However, though, you do travel extensively, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I'd like to travel more, doesn't everyone? I'd like to be around more, but my work tends to take me places. I work in the English language industry in Malta, so I'm lucky to have the opportunity to travel on work, besides the usual getaway here and there, as much as possible.
But this travel, is it usually a week or 2 weeks, or has it been an extended period at any point?
No, at the most a couple of weeks. I tend to like being close enough to Malta to not be away for very long. So my getaways tend to be for 5-6 days or 2-3 weeks at most. And when it's 2-3 weeks, it's usually going back to visit family and friends in Canada.
So you're, as we said, a sort of returned migrant. And you're, in fact, the first returned migrant I'm speaking to on this program. So far, I've interviewed many foreigners who made Malta their home. You are Maltese, totally Maltese, but you've lived for a very long time in a foreign country, and therefore you qualify for this program because you've lived in two countries and can compare the two. And that's the whole point of this program, getting a perception, a view of Malta from foreign eyes, so to speak. So, Genevieve, why had your parents moved to Canada, and when was it that they did?
It was the late 70s. They were a young couple with a young daughter that my father's family, a lot of my father's family, are live in Canada, so had started a life there. And I think it was a time when a lot of people were leaving and looking for different options. And having a young child, I think they saw it as an opportunity to give me an opportunity that maybe wasn't available at the time in Malta. So that was, if you ask them, I think that was the choices they made, was to give me the opportunity to maybe a better education or opportunities for work, for my dad especially. My mom's a homemaker, and that made it, you know, something that she could move around. So, but if you ask them why they left, that would be it. They looked at it as an opportunity. That's the word I can keep repeating, because that's what they would.
A lot of Maltese would have probably given the same answer over the years. That's the reason for their emigration. And some of them made it big and then came back. Others remained. And do you remember anything of Malta at all up till age 4 when your family took you along to Canada?
For the record, we didn't make it big and come back. We just came back. but I think we were blessed in a number of ways. Do I remember anything about Malta before I left? Not really. Not very much. I was very young. I was 4. So like I said, my formative years, a lot of my memories are Canadian. I don't have a lot of memories of Malta. What I do have memories of, though, is that my parents did make sure that Malta was ingrained in our lifestyle. So we spoke Maltese at home, and I do speak fluent Maltese, and we still speak a lot of Maltese at home. And we always had a connection to the Maltese community, and we made sure that we came back every couple of years, and family vacations were in Malta for 6 weeks at a go. So I remember a couple of summers where, you know, Holy Communion was in Malta anyways. My parents brought me back for that. And so I have good memories of Malta when I was young, even though I was living in Canada, which is not, a lot of people can't really say that, even the language. I was lucky to have family that kept that up for me.
So where in Canada were you living, and can you tell us a little bit about it? Describe your earliest memories of Canada, and right up to age 18, your upbringing there.
So I lived in the metropolitan of Toronto. We moved around over the years through Mississauga, Bramalea, Brampton. So that's...
When you say the metropolitan of Toronto, could you describe that? Because I don't know what that means.
I guess that means it's similar to London and the rural areas around, or the
sort of greater London area?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. It would be like equivalent to the greater London area, and then the cities in that area. So Toronto is a city, but there's a metropolitan, so there's a, what's called, I guess, a greater Toronto area. And Brampton, Bramalea, and Mississauga are all cities in those area, in that area. and that's where I grew up. My last residence was in Brampton. And describing it, well, it's a small community that we grew up in. We were surrounded by a lot of people of different cultures. I was really lucky to have a lot of Portuguese around me. My best friends were from Jamaica, from Portugal, from Sri Lanka. My best friend next door neighbor was from India.
And you say this was lucky to have all these different influences.
Yes, I think it was. I think it makes me who I am today. That I was able to. I'm a foodie, so I got to have lunch and dinner at a lot of these people's houses and get a lot of really good homemade meals. And not because my mom didn't, because obviously that was where I ate most. But it was nice to try different things, to hear different languages, to see different lifestyles. And I went. I always went to Catholic schools, so all of these people were still. We still had a lot in common, and which sounds silly because I started with Catholic school, but it wasn't because we had a lot of religious differences. It was, but cultural differences were huge. Obviously, I'm mentioning Jamaica, Sri Lanka, India, and but we were this group of kids, and there was Maltese people living next door to us, so we had Maltese neighbors as well, and just Canadians, and that would not have any. Culture affiliation, or wouldn't say they're any from anywhere else but Canada. Maybe they might have like Irish or British, but they would say they're Canadian. So, and this was a group of kids that, you know, hung out all the time. And we think of Canada and we think of snow, but the snow can be fun too. So I have these great memories of this group of kids in the neighborhood building snowmen or helping family members. Like we would help each other shovel snow on the driveway, and my mother's going to hear this and go, I don't remember you ever shuffling snow. Just realizing. But we used to do, like, I have great memories of my dad taking us, like, the neighborhood kids for bike rides. And, you know, right now I think locally there's this big trend with people are taking up cycling so much more. And it's such a pleasant thing to see because those are good memories I have. And I have great memories of doing things like apple picking in autumn. This is the perfect time of year where, you know, my family would go to an apple orchard, and this is something people did, and they'd spend a, you know, Sunday morning picking apples and then go home, and my father would make, I don't know, apple wine, and my mother would make a pie, and, you know, we'd all happy bunnies. So this is the neighborhood I grew up in, and everything was my elementary school, which would be primary school, was walking distance, so I got to go home for lunch if I wanted to. And it's funny because I hear, you know, I think about it now, and I hated the fact that I had to go home for lunch because I wanted to stay with the kids that didn't. And I'm so lucky that I got to go home for lunch. So it's all those little things, but we had a great neighborhood. I was always in really good neighborhoods.
And you don't recall any tension or prejudice or suspicion amongst the different cultures that lived together in that neighborhood, or do you?
I was, maybe because I was young, This was the 80s, and it's Canada, and Canada is very much a kind of tossed salad of cultures rather than a melting pot. Everyone doesn't have to be the same. We can kind of, everyone kept their cultures and their identities, and it was okay. I never felt any tension. I think, in fact, it was a bit of a shock when I came here and I realized that it was a very homogeneous society when I grew up in all of these different cultures, and I miss that a lot. I miss, you know, being able to try different foods and meet different people and speak different languages. But I didn't feel that tension. Again, I was young. I was under 18. When you're that young, you're a little bit oblivious to what's happening. And as long as the people around you are okay, I think it was, you know, under 18, it's more girl-boy that's the issue than it is color of your skin or where you're from.
And the Maltese community in Canada said to be very strong. You said there were some Maltese people living near you. You hear of the Maltese pastizzi shop in Toronto. Could you tell us a little bit about how Maltese culture remains strong, the Maltese identity remains active in Canada, at least from your point of view when you were there?
Well, Toronto has the only Maltese speaking church outside of Malta. So it's St. Paul Shipwreck Church, downtown Toronto in Dundas. And a lot of the Maltese community congregate around that, especially in the weekends. We were never really a family that did that regularly, but through different things I was involved with when I kind of got a little bit older, I was in that area a lot. And yeah, the pastizzi shop is always a big attraction. You know, when you don't have something, it's kitty twisties, pastizzi. These are things that you just want, and you don't realize how much you want them until you can't have them, which is silly. But and I was saying the same thing about Canada the other day. I said, I miss English muffins, and I miss bagels. And yes, you find bagels, but they're not as accessible. And an English muffin is a bland bread boiled like bun, and you'd think that that's not something you're going to miss, but I really miss English muffins. And I had it recently at a restaurant, and I thought, isn't that great, an English muffin? Like, I was, you know, somebody gave me gold. But it's the stupid things that you miss. So the pastizzi shop, that's where people meet, and they talk about Malta like it's, you know, this foreign land that, well, obviously for them it is, but like it's far away and you'll never get there. I think what's really interesting is how when you leave a country, your culture and language develop and grow every day. And if you go back to Toronto, you go back to Dundas, and you talk to somebody who left in the 70s, they're speaking Maltese from the 70s. Because that's when it stopped for them. They're not part of the growth and the development of our language. If you meet someone that left in the 80s, they're speaking Maltese with the colloquial terms that we would use in the 80s. Whereas, you know, you hear it, and it's different, and it's funny, and it's interesting because it's funny.
So you've been back recently, and this pastizzi shop is still there, and the community is still pretty similar to how it was as you remember it when you left at 18. But you've noticed these kind of things that you've just mentioned.
Yeah, I haven't been back since 2009. I should be going up next year because I do miss being home, which is also interesting. I always say that when I was in Canada, I was a Maltese Canadian, and now that I'm in Malta, I'm a Canadian Maltese. So wherever you ask me where home is, it depends what country I'm standing in when I say that. So here, if I refer to home, it's Canada, and I've been here a long time, so it shouldn't be. And when I'm in Canada, home is Malta. So that's interesting. But yes, when you go back, and if you walk down the streets in the Maltese community, you could probably point out who is from which era and when they migrated back to Canada.
And Canadians in general, whether it's the Canadians with a Jamaican or Sri Lankan or whatever connection, and the Canadian Canadians, do they know anything about Malta? Do they know Malta exists, the average Canadian?
Have you been anywhere where you didn't talk about where you're from, Colin? Everyone who knows somebody who's Maltese knows about Malta, because we're very proud of our country, I think, and we talk about it a lot, and we make sure that we get it out there. Very recently I was talking to an Australian, and who's just built a connection with Malta recently, and he said to me, I grew up hearing names like Falzon and Zamit, and I thought they were all Italian. You're Maltese, and you're taking over the world, one country at a time. And I think there is an element. We do let people know who we are and where we're from. And I always talk about geography class in Canada, you know, because it's such a mixed nation of culture, of cultures. Geography class always kind of started with everyone come and put a push pin on the map of where you're from. And I'd walk up and just put a pin right in the middle of the Mediterranean, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, there's nothing there. yeah, that's home. That's where I'm from. And that was, so you, and then people start asking questions, and because it's such a mix of cultures, there's a lot of international. I mean, I remember school every year, we'd have an international night where everybody brought something over from their country, or prepared like a board of, you know, like a kind of a wish board of everything that represents their country. And there was always kinny and twisties involved, and the Maltese language. So people are aware, I think, and especially I grew up in a very European community. So there was a lot of Portuguese, there was a lot of Italians, and those tend to know where Malta is a little bit more than the others.
So 18 years old, and you came back to Malta. Was it you and your family?
Actually, the last vacation or holiday we had before I was 18 was when I was 16, and I fell in love with it even as a teenager. And I do love Malta even today. So at the age of 18, I wasn't actually 18. I was graduating from high school, and Dad said, as all dads do, what do you want for your graduation? And I said, well, one-way ticket to Malta. And he said, excuse me? And I said, yeah, I think I'm going to go back and do university there and see how I like it. And Dad's always, I think a little bit of him was always very hopeful that we'd come back eventually. Mom, not so much. Mom really likes living in Canada, or liked living in Canada. So he was very quick on the take, and the next thing I knew, I was on a plane, and I was making my way back to the island.
As you said earlier in the program, Canada, perhaps, especially at that time, offered many more opportunities than Malta, a more diverse choice of things to study, a more diverse choice of jobs, and yet you fell in love with Malta at age 16, and you decided to come back and continue studying here. Could you try and explain why?
I like the community feeling of Malta. I like the fact that family and friends are close by, and that I like the fact that I live in Europe. And even though Malta as an island may not be as diverse as you'd like it to be, but we have access to the diversity that we need. So we have so many options in terms of, back to the beginning when you said traveling, maybe that's why I travel, because I like the idea of spending time in Germany for a couple of days and, you know, eating enough schnitzel or everything that is so stereotypical that as a tourist I shouldn't be doing, but I do anyways. There is that. So I loved being in Malta. I love the community. I love the sea. I love the fact that I drive to work, and wherever I go, there's the sea on one side or the other of me. I think that's absolutely brilliant. I love the fact that a lot of things are walking distance. The climate is fabulous, you know, and Christmas Eve is a walk in a light outfit. I love the climate. I'm not a winter person.
So. And all this stuff was already in your mind when you were 18 and you decided to come back. So you came back and you started university, and what did you do?
I met you.
Yes, we became friends at that time. Yes, in fact, that's where we met the first time, and we've kept in touch ever since. But do tell us a bit more about your university years and when you first came back, and was it all that you thought it would be, or was it a disappointment in any way?
When I first came back, it was tough, and it was tough simply for the reason that, because of the same reasons I loved being here, which was the community, it also meant that I was excluded in a way, because university was a lot of cliques, a lot of groups of students that came from the secondary school together. So because of streaming at that time, I don't know if that's changed all that much, but because of streaming, you had people that since Form 2 or Form 3 happened to be in the same classes or the same subjects together and ended up in the same course together, so they've known each other that long. I didn't have that background. I didn't have that connection with anyone, so that had to be built. I can't say that I was ever left out, and I quickly made friends, so that was never an issue. But it does take time to build those relationships that people, or to fit into those relationships that people say they've had for years and years. And my friends, my people, my group, my gang, were back in Canada, so that was a little bit tough. There was also the idea that a lot of us walk down the street and we have memories wherever we go, right? It's the playground that I had my first kiss, or it's the playground where I skinned my knee first, or whatever. I mentioned bike rides with my dad. I have memories in Brampton. They didn't come with me. So it was really weird, and it was, I guess, a little bit of a psychological study, or a sociological study, I suppose. Walking down the street and not having a connection to anything was really weird. It's like being on vacation permanently. Mm. But not in the good sense, because there was nothing that I could say, I'm going to go to that place to give me a secure feeling. There was nothing that I could say that I'm going to hold on to. In fact, it's really weird because for a very long time, like even bedroom furniture, I needed to have it in a particular layout because at least that made me feel there was a connection with something.
But surely there were some relatives here in Malta, perhaps, that you could get a little bit of connection with your parents, etc.
Yeah, but they're people that didn't share my childhood. So I had nothing that shared my childhood. Today it's different. Today I walk down the street and I have memories everywhere, but it took time to make those memories. So
eventually your parents did come back as well, right?
Yes, my parents followed me back a few months after, because obviously from the minute I said we were going, then the plans started getting in motion, were put in motion. But, yeah, they followed me back, and I have a younger sister as well. She was 10 at the time, so that was a bit tougher for her because I went into university, so, you know, you kind of have that too. She went into primary school and secondary school, so, but she's done really well, and she's fit in really well, and I'm not sure, I can't really speak for her, but I'm pretty sure she's not interested in going anywhere else at this point. But you said opportunities. I think things have changed since when my parents chose to leave Malta. First of all, I think we're connected to a lot more places, whether that's accessibility because of flights or whether it's just because of the internet and social media and all the accessibility we have online. You can work in Malta and still kind of work other places at the same time. The opportunities, if you want them, they're out there now. They're not hidden. They're not kept away from us. It's a different situation. So I don't ever feel like I don't have opportunities because I live in Malta.
Well, absolutely. Malta has changed incredibly over the years, and there are many more opportunities, wider horizons, and also different nationalities. Even a little bit of that tossed salad, you said, instead of melting pot. But there's that kind of different communities working here as well, or traveling to Malta, and that really has changed. What did you study at university, and could you tell us a little bit about your professional life leading up to what you do now?
What I do now probably has very little to what I studied, but I started psychology. That was my undergrad, so I have a B-Psych, and then I did a postgraduate certificate in education, PSD, personal social development, and I taught, I was a teacher for about, I think almost 10 years, yeah, 10 years, in different programs. I taught PSD, I worked in sexuality and relationships education, I worked in international education, so even...
Can I just interrupt you there? So you were a teacher with a Canadian background,
yes,
teaching Maltese kids, or mostly Maltese kids, so could you compare or discuss a little bit about your own childhood and teenage years in Canada and the kids that you encountered while you were teaching, and any big differences that you can point out between Canadians of that age and Maltese of that age?
I think every teacher, wherever they're from, is influenced by their own upbringing in a school. So in my case, I know what used to bug me in school, and that was teachers telling me exactly how things should be. So I had a real problem when I started teaching because I assumed kids would not want that detailed or specific instruction because that used to irritate me. And the teachers I remember that I loved and I can say influenced me were the teachers that let me develop my creativity. And creativity not in the in the meaning of art and painting, but creativity in the ability to, you know,
think, perhaps,
think
and
yeah,
yeah
to
make up
think
your own
and
mind.
Question. Think and question. Okay. I'm a big questioner. But why?
Well, this is a famous issue. I think you're going to be telling us that is lacking here, right?
Yeah. It was even at university when I was studying PGC. I was shocked when I was put in a school, and I won't mention the schools, but it was a better school or considered what would be considered a better school in Malta. And I walked in, and I said good morning, and everyone said good morning, Miss Abela. And I thought, wow, I landed somewhere different.
You mean the formality and
absolutely, and it was very everyone kind of sing song and they replied. And then I said, okay, let's get our files out and we'll start, and they went, okay, and they got and they sat down and they waited for me to impart knowledge. And it was like, so how was your weekend? And they kind of looked at each other and like, are we having a conversation? They were a little bit shocked. I was a lot shocked because for me, I was very lucky because I had an education that asked me to think and allowed me to question. And there was a lot of questioning and there was a lot of creative development. It doesn't mean that I didn't have teachers that didn't allow that, but the teachers I remember are the ones that did. So I wanted to be that kind of a teacher.
So you kind of encountered a lot of straight-jacketed systems, a little bit of too much focus on academia and not enough teaching to think and allowing creativity to come to flourish?
At the risk of being politically incorrect, I had the opportunity to be in two different schools during my teaching practice. My first teaching practice was in an opportunity center where there was maybe kids coming from, again, being politically incorrect, broken homes or disadvantaged upbringings. And then I had my second teaching practice was in a junior lyceum. I don't even think they call them those anymore.
No, they don't. They're not called that anymore. But for the benefit of our listeners, there was a little elite secondary schools.
Right, and so my first experience was with these kids that had opinions and they were rambunctious and they wanted to talk and they wanted to discuss and they disagreed with you and they thought, and they enjoyed the fact that someone gave them enough attention to listen to them. And then my second experience was in a junior lyceum where the kids were more academically streamed and were more interested in making sure they got the great grades because the whole concept of discussion and I'm not the fountain of all knowledge for them was a little bit more confusing. Unfortunately, I'm the first type of person. Mm-hmm. I want to have a discussion. I want to ask questions. I want to learn from everyone because there's never enough learning going on. So I fit in a lot more with the disadvantaged kids.
But some people would say that for disciplinary purposes, the second option works better. Or in your opinion, do you think that it doesn't have to be so? If it still is in that way in schools, which it's been some time since you were teaching and doing teaching practice, that it doesn't need to be so formal.
I think, and this is making me sound very old, and I'm not, but I think the problems are with discipline is not being afraid or stepping over the line. I think it's just respect. I mean, let's be manners, disrespect. People have lost a lot of that. I grew up at home and in school where you said please and thank you and you respected people, and because they respected you, then you respected them, and that was there was a whole conversation involved in that. Whereas today, it's them and us and everyone, and it's all about rights, and nobody feels like they have, and again, I'm making myself sound old, but there's no reference to responsibilities anymore. And I think that's where we need to focus a lot more. Instead of the A pluses, we need to focus a lot more on developing well-rounded youth that look at society as a responsibility that they have.
But just to conclude on this point, overall, your experience with being educated in Canada and your experience in the education system in Malta, at least at the period of time 10, 15 years ago when you were in the field, would you say that the Canadian experience, the Canadians do education better than we do, or do you think our system is better than the Canadians, or am I being too simplistic?
A few years after I came back, I was visiting Canada. I was back there for a while, just for a summer, and I got in touch with some of my old teachers, and I was having a conversation with a guidance teacher, in fact. And I was saying, look, I'm a guidance teacher now. I'm so happy. You see, I did what you told me to do and all of that. And we had a conversation about school. And what you're saying for me might be the case, but it was interesting because this teacher said to me, you had a great experience in high school. For me, high school was great. I had a great time. It was fantastic. It was something I'd relive over and over again. Not everyone has that. So I can say yes, and I had a great education in Canada. It doesn't mean that everyone would say the same thing, because I think education is a rounded culture, in that you have to have the support of family, you have to be interested in it, it has to be interesting to you, and I happen to be one of those people that all those boxes were checked. You know, my parents were very involved in my education, but not just academic. They made sure I had extracurricular activities all the time. I did ballet, like I said. Dad took us cycling. You know, we did things with mom all the time. There was always things happening that were not necessarily books. But books were around as well, which was fantastic. So my experience may not be everyone's experience, but I can say that education in Canada was good for me. And it was interesting being part of the education system here.
But do you think the system here is better or worse than Canada? Or feel free to refuse to answer that question.
I don't think it's better or worse. I don't think enough people take responsibility for the education of kids in Malta.
You think there should be more involvement even from the home side, not just send them off to school and kind of like education happens in the school and that's it?
I think it needs to be both ways. I think there are great teachers out there, and there are teachers that don't take it as seriously as maybe they should. And there are great parents, and there are parents that send their kids to school because it's a place to put them during the day. I think it's both ways. I think society in general, I think walking down the street and when somebody doesn't say excuse me and they push past me, I say excuse me. Mm-hmm. And when I give something to someone and I say please and they don't respond, and I'm one of those people that goes, thank you. That's what you're supposed to say. And when I let people pass by, you know, I let a car pass and they don't even acknowledge me, I'll be the person that kind of goes, you're welcome. Because that's how I grew up.
And do you think the majority of people who went through the Canadian education experience ended up something similar to you?
I don't know. You can say that. You know more Canadians than I do, probably. I would think so. I think it's a stereotype. That we're all extremely polite and we say sorry a lot. So the Canadians in general are known for that, right? We apologize a lot.
Okay, so indirectly, I think we've answered my question.
Għedin tisamaw il-program Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li jxandar kullnar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' flaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.
Genevieve Abella, you did psychology, you did teaching practice, the PGCE, you taught for 10 years, and then your career developed in a different direction.
Completely. I was asked to join the Ministry of Tourism at the time, which is completely in a different direction than that education, but I fell in love with tourism, worked with the minister at the time for 4 years. And one of the remits that I was involved in was English language education, because obviously it straddles the tourism industry, the tourism ministry as well. And I started working with the English language industry when the association I work with was looking for a full-timer. I thought, oh, that's interesting, and I stepped towards that. So really and truly, and I'm very political by nature. Political not necessarily in political parties, but political as a person. And so for me, I always say that my job currently is, had I written what I want as my dream job, it's very much that. There's always things that you can fine-tune, but I have lobbying, I have teaching or education and tourism all in the same basket.
So what is your job title?
I'm CEO. I'm Chief Executive Officer for Feltham, the Federation of English Language Teaching Organizations of Malta. So that's why I travel, because I do a lot of marketing for Malta as a destination for English language and Feltham schools as quality assured schools. But like I'm saying, it's a lot of the work I do, probably about 70% of what I do is lobbying. So I work very closely with the government and authorities on the different areas of tourism, education, internationalization of education, to promote the English language industry and to ensure that, you know, we're giving the best quality service to anyone coming to Malta for that product. I do a lot of marketing. And I then quality assurance, the association is a quality assurance agency, so we do that for our schools.
To make sure that the students who come here, especially the younger ones, but also the adults, have the best service, but also are kept safe, etc. Now, in the context of this program, Malta Through Foreign Eyes, what does Malta offer that's so great? I mean, is your job an easy one, to promote Malta to Europeans or wherever they come from? I mean, perhaps you can elaborate as well what kind of English language students we have. Are they all Germans and Scandinavians and French and Italians and a few perhaps Libyans? Or do we get people from all over the world? In the context of this program, could you tell us a little bit about Malta Through Foreign Eyes, the eyes of these students?
It's not that difficult to sell Malta as soon as they figure out where it is, and if they've visited or someone has visited, the tendency is that we have a great product to sell. And it's not just sun and sand, and it's not just juniors anymore. The English language industry started with kids under 18. Today we're 60% over 18, and it's not just Europeans. Our third largest market is Russia. And third country nationals from Colombia, Venezuela. We have people coming over. You mentioned Libya, but we have people coming over from Korea and Japan,
and then, China.
Yes, China as well. They're not a huge number. The Chinese tend to prefer to travel for further and higher education rather than English language teaching. However, we have, like I said, third country nationals coming from all over, and the stay has changed as well. We tend to see the juniors around in the summer. So July, the middle of July is peak, where we have these kids running around and they're all in school t-shirts. Nobody realizes that there's a lot of adults as well. And those kids stay for 2 weeks. But we have people that come over for 6 months, 9 months, 10 months, even a year.
And all the way from places like South America, you say? I mean, how do they come here from Korea or Japan or South America? They come all the way to tiny little Malta.
Well, I think we are 3 hours away from the UK, right? What, three, 4 hours, three and a half? But it's still a full immersion program. Everyone in Malta speaks English, or there is, we'd like to see that a little bit better, but in general, most people speak English, and it's cost effective. It's not as expensive as living in the UK. It's safer. For a lot of these cultures that we're mentioning, especially the South Americans, the culture is very similar. So they feel like they can fit in a lot easier.
It's more Latin.
Exactly. Yeah. And even the climate. I mean, and I don't want anybody getting angry at me, but let's be honest. If you choose to the British climate to the Maltese climate, there's very little.
Even Brits would say that.
There's very little comparison. So if you're leaving your country to go live in another country for a lengthy period of time, you're going to choose somewhere that's comfortable. And the climate helps to make it comfortable. So again, the climate, we're very hospitable people. We have great language skills. We tend to be able to welcome foreigners without any prejudice or racism. And I think that's a big one for us. So that attracts students. Word of mouth is our best seller.
You mentioned prejudice and racism. Is that a major part of the attraction for Malta, to Malta, for a lot of these students from countries where Asians, for example, or black people? You feel, what I'm trying to say here is, we do hear sometimes of the occasional racist incident or prejudice happening in Malta, whether it's on public transport or, but you're saying that as a country, we're actually pretty good on that score?
I think we are. Unfortunately, these kinds of issues that come up tend to get a lot of press, maybe because they don't happen as often as they would in other countries. I'm not saying that we're perfect, and I'm not saying that any kind of racism or prejudice is acceptable, because it's not. However, first of all, students tend to live in student communities, so they tend to spend a lot more time around other foreigners. And secondly, one of the attractions of Malta is definitely the hospitality of the country, and that people feel like they are welcome in people's homes or in hotels.
Yes, or host families, right?
Yeah. Not all students stay in host families. Most of them don't today, and they choose self-catering flats or what we call now holiday homes. But in general, the overall feeling is that they're very... they fit in and they're very welcome. And the Maltese tend to look for what's in common. So the minute you, and you see this happening even in the streets, you know, somebody says, oh, I'm from Colombia. Oh, do you speak Spanish? I learned a little bit of Spanish, and they say a couple of swear words in Spanish. But that's what people do. And it's okay and it's fun and, you know, and there is an exchange of that. And we do have an interest in cultures. And the Japanese and the Koreans don't seem to have any issue with being in Malta at all, and they enjoy the culture. We have a lot for them to see. So the tendency is the Asians look for a lot more of the culture.
And the history. And
now, I'm being stereotypical here, obviously, because everyone's separate and individual, and there are different personalities. But you do find a student profile, and the Asian student profile tends to be the culture and the history and, you know, historic sites and all of that, whereas maybe the Latin American culture, Latin American profile would be much more interested in, you know, food and going out and socializing. So it depends. You get a lot of that. But I think it is an attraction that we're safe. You mentioned that we've had incidents, but we haven't had incidents of, you know, you always kind of stay back on how you say it, but we haven't had violent incidents.
Absolutely. We don't have race riots or anything like that. What we do have occasionally is animosity towards migrants, which exists all over Europe, for example. Sometimes it comes out in social media or that kind of thing. But as you say, it's still a very, very safe country. And perhaps the general Maltese public, even the ones who perhaps see a problem with the migrant issue, are accepting of people of different cultures and different races who are here as guests.
I think it's we like to be comfortable as a country, as a nationality. And I think it's really funny because when people ask me this, I always refer back, and I won't mention the country, but you'll figure it out on your own. We've had more issues with a particular European nationality from an English language standpoint than we've had with skin color or religion, because this particular European nationality I'm talking about are people that tend to wake up late in the day or start their day late but spend a lot of time late in the day. They're loud. And even though we tend to be loud, we're not as loud, and we're not as,
boisterous?
Yes, boisterous. I think that's the word. Boisterous, you know. And so whenever we've had issues, and, you know, sometimes we have incidents with students staying out late or partying, it tends to be more the European cultures rather than issues of race and religion, which is interesting, and people don't realize that. So I think we're still a very safe country, and we're still a very comfortable country, and people can walk from here to there. I mean, we're just lazy. But the truth is, you could walk from Valletta to Sliema in, what, 30 minutes, 40 minutes? For a lot of people coming from big countries, that's around the corner. You know, a 40-minute walk is around the corner. For us, it's like a whole other city, and you have to drive there.
Now, this is very encouraging to hear, and of course, it says a lot about the maturity of our country.
And the services. We take a lot of things for granted, and again, at the risk of getting into politics, yesterday I had foreigners in my office, and they were saying that they're staying in Safi. And I said, oh, wow. I said, that must be difficult to get around, in my ignorance of everything that is Safi. And they were very happy, and it's a beautiful village, and they were saying what they've seen and what they haven't, and that they brought their bicycles with them, and they're getting around on the bicycles. And I said, everywhere? And they said, no, and then we use the public transport system since it's so great. And everyone in the office at that moment stopped and looked up, because none of us use the public transport system, and all we hear is the media, right?
Absolutely. There's been people on this very program who have complained about the public transport. This is the first time we're actually hearing something good about it in the recent public transport.
wow, this was yesterday, so this was very recent. And this person said to me, yeah, and the public transport here is so good. And I swear, you could hear a pin drop. And we all stopped and went, oh, okay. And that's the thing. It's the proverbial kind of when you're living something,
you take it for granted.
You take it for granted.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when they said this, I said, okay, well, if you're happy, I mean, that's what's really important here. Like that, you know, somebody who's visited our country is going to leave with that positive experience of getting from Safi to anywhere in Malta has been a, you know, comfortable experience. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Well, at this point, let's just say that perhaps the good service that is being provided to the less busy areas of Malta, places like Safi, if the public transport company, for example, could replicate that experience to the busier parts, Sliema, St. Julian's, the northern part of Malta, and I can understand that it's probably quite difficult to do that, that's where more traffic is. But if that can be replicated, it would make Malta a better place and there'll be less complaints.
Yeah, yes. I can't really say otherwise. I know we've had some problems with the Sliema area because of congestion, especially in July and August with students and so on. But apparently, like, I guess that would be the reason. The less congested areas are working well. So maybe we need to look at why they're working well. And like you're saying, replicate them. But services in general are very good. I mean,
Well, I'd like to hold you on that point. I mean, we often talk about Maltese bureaucracy, how things sometimes don't work. And you're saying that you don't really get too many complaints about that sort of thing.
No, we don't really. We get very few, as an English language industry, we get very few complaints about very little on this island. So unless it's someone who just doesn't like Malta, and you're going to find these people everywhere where they've landed, and immediately they've not taken a liking, and they have everything bad to say about it. But in general, whether it's accommodation and quality of accommodation, in the case of English language teaching, the academics are always very high quality, and we rate very well in the destinations. There are 8 English language destinations worldwide, and we rate very well in terms of quality of academics. So that's something that we're very proud of. But services, whether it's transport, whether it is museums or cultural sites, no, we don't get a lot of complaints. And I don't know if I'm living in my own little bubble, but or nobody tells me about them, but we get a lot of positivity. People are happy. Again, it's our hospitality. We're very conscious that these are people that are keeping our economy going and that we're happy to have around.
Well, this is very, very, very heartening to hear, absolutely. And it makes me very happy that I'm doing this program as well, because I keep trying to prod my guests into saying negative things about Malta in the interests of learning from these things. And I'm getting a lot of many more positive things than negative things, which is great. And I don't think it's my guests, including yourself, just being polite. But surely there are some things about Malta that you wish were different, that were improved. And can you elaborate? Can you talk a little bit about some of these things, if there are any?
I think we need to give people more opportunities to express their opinions. How am I going to put this? In the terms that we're a small country, that if you allowed more youth, and I don't mean youth as in young, but youth as in innovative ideas, to get involved in decision-making processes. I think I'm a woman, and for me, I think there are very strong women out there that we don't necessarily sing the song for, and I think it would be nice to see them being given a stronger platform, and not because they're women. I'm not a big fan of positive discrimination, just because they're great role models for other women. I'm not saying we're bad at that, because we're not, but we're not good enough, if that makes any sense. I think we need to change in terms of how we approach family, and I think we've lost a lot of respect for people.
And here in Malta, or as humankind?
I see it a lot more here. When I travel, people, going back to the, people say please and thank you, and people say, and people go out of their way. I think we've forgotten a little bit of you know, the manners that our grandparents taught us, the from one to four people nap, and you don't make noise before 9 a.m, and you, you know, clean up after yourself when you sit at a table, and you push your chair in when you move away from the table. All of these little things, if you look around, you find that they're happening less and less. And it makes me sound really old, and I'm not, but...
No, but they're absolutely relevant points, and it's, you're not the first person to bring this kind of thing up in this series.
I think parents are negating their responsibility as parents, if I had to be completely honest. I think parents have gone to the extreme of they keep saying they want to be friends with their kids, but the truth is kids need to learn manners and discipline, and I think the fact that we don't have that is coming from the fact that parents don't want the inconvenience of being parents, which is going to get me a lot of bad looks, but it's the truth, in my opinion. In my humble opinion, that's what I think.
So in general, the level of parenting perhaps needs to improve a little bit, a bit more discipline, a bit more...
I think a little bit more respect. I think you respect your kids by teaching them manners and teaching them respect. And, you know, it's maybe it's not just parenting. Maybe, like, it could be just society. It could be teaching. It could be parenting. It could be me as someone who runs into people. But I'd like to... I think if you ask me what bugs me the most about the country... It's really that. It's the whole, you don't feel like people are respectful anymore.
Yeah, so there's lack of respect on the roads, lack of respect in building sites, lack of respect when people take certain decisions to block a certain area. And I think anybody listening will not fail to agree that there is a lack of respect and thoughtfulness in general. I'm not quite sure, perhaps there are other countries that are even worse than us in this and other countries that are better.
Yes, but we're talking about Malta. So we can only take our context. And in our context, if I was to change anything, it would be just that. It would be just that I think that we've forgotten what it means to be polite and to have manners. And you're right. I mean, you hear about, like, road rage all the time. Recently, the whole traffic issues that I think have been, you know, put in the media again.
Blown out of proportion?
I don't know about blown out of proportion, but drive. And you see, it's not necessarily because they're bad decisions in planning. It's also that nobody wants to give way to anyone else. And it's just disrespect. Because if people gave way to each other and moved a little bit and the traffic moved a little bit easier because not everyone's in a rush to get everywhere else, I don't know. Maybe I'm being idealistic, but I think it would just be a little bit, it would be a nicer place to live.
Genevieve Abella on Campus FM's Benignane Baranin. Let's go back to Canada.
Okay.
When you were a child, right up to age 18, before you came back to Malta. The food in Canada, the food here in Malta, you're a foodie. Could you elaborate a little bit?
We've come such a long way in this country, and it's so nice to watch happen, especially the recent move towards fresh food. And, you know, okay, there's the buzzwords of raw and organic, but it's not even just that. It's we've gone back to fresh food, and we've gone back to wanting to eat well. When I arrived here, I remember fast food joints opening, and they were fantastic, and it was really nice. But really and truly, I mean, we've come a long way as an interest, foodies don't want burgers and fries anymore.
Plus, there's health issues now as well. We've become more aware, haven't we?
We have. And it's so nice, even the diversity. I mean, Canada, you said Canada food, Malta food. One of the things I missed most when I got here was that you could have ethnic food. You could have food of different ethnicities. And when I say that, I don't mean necessarily Indian or Chinese, but I mean you could have a good Greek meal, you could have a good Polish meal, you could have a good Korean meal.
Sushi.
You know, and all of a sudden I found myself in a place where food was very limited to either fine dining and French cuisine, or pizza, pasta, and Italian, you know, kind
of... With the occasional Maltese, a bit of rabbit.
With the occasional Maltese.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Today, whatever you have a hankering for, you can find, right? Like, you mentioned sushi, and you can have different... whether it's sushi, whether it's Greek, whether it's Korean even. I've had a fantastic Korean meal very recently. There's so much to choose from now, and we've come a long way. And people look for this, and you don't see people wrinkling their noses anymore to something that's different. Everyone wants to try that little bit of different now. And it's nice to see, and it's been a pleasure seeing that. And even availability. I mentioned English muffins, which sounds silly, but even availability. I remember when we got here, you know, cereals. There was a number of cereals you choose from. And then today, whatever you want, you're going to find. And even you find American brands. Sometimes you need to look for them a little bit more, but you find these things that, for me, was growing up. Can't figure out why I wanted them in the first place now. But at the time, it's always nice to see them there. You know, the macaroni and cheese phase, I remember. The first time I saw a box of macaroni and cheese, which is dry pasta and dry cheese. So it's not something you want to, you know, cook. But the first time, I remember going, oh my God, macaroni and cheese. Yes, let's have macaroni and cheese. And then thinking, I really enjoy this? Why am I enjoying this? Because I get such better food. But people have become so much aware. And even you mentioned Maltese. For a long time in this country, we were almost, I won't use the word ashamed, but we were not really proud of our cuisine. And for us, Maltese food was rabbit or pastizzi. Today, you see so many of these farmhouse kind of
agrotourism
places,
offering
even, I mean, again, I won't advertise, but even the mainstream Maltese options that are there. And it's not just rabbit and pastizzi, but it's actual cuisine that you enjoy, that when I have people from abroad here, I'm happy to go and say, this is Maltese food, and these are the kinds of things that people would sit around the table and eat. And we have such great cuisine, and we're developing it. And it's just using fresh ingredients. I mean, you know, it's the minestra, but with a twist of 2015.
Just for the record, we're recording this program in November of 2015. Genevieve, the future. Do you see yourself living here in Malta for the rest of your life, or is Canada going back an option, or perhaps another country?
I don't think you can ever say something so... You can't put yourself in a box. I don't like to say ever or never, so I can't imagine me going back to Canada full-time, but I can very much imagine me finding a job that allows me to be in Canada for a few months a year. I can't imagine me ever leaving Malta, but again, I can imagine me having a job in a country that is, you know, a direct flight away from the country. So, my future, I have a really good life here, and I like everything about it, and, but I like the idea of change as well. So I think it's just a matter of, you got to let things happen, and they do. They happen on their own, and opportunities come knocking when you least expect them. And I'd like to get a lot more involved in the internationalization of education. I think we have so much to offer. And so we'll see where that takes me.
Genevieve Avella, thank you very much for being on Minainen Barani.
Thank you for having me, Colin. This has been a pleasure.
U dik kienet edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Minajnejn Barranin, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqgħu niddiskuti t-tajjeb u dak li hu inqas tajjeb f'pajjiżna, ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni jew oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll tistgħu issibuh fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.